Okay, so go ahead and start the recording and do the roll call, please, Natalie.
Thank you, Dev. The recordings have been started. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Technology Task Force meeting on the 20th of July, 2015. On the call today, we have Gordon Chilcott, Juan Manuel Rojas, Devon Antilaksin, Glenn McKnight, Sam Langfranco, and Judith Helstein. We have received apologies, so a tentative one first from Jimmy Schultz, and then confirmed apologies from Ali El-Michel and Tracy Hackshaw. From staff, we have Steve Allison, Ariel Yang, and myself, Natalie Tergan. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Dev.
Okay, thank you very much, Natalie. This is Devon Antilaksin. So just also... Oh, dear. Just to go through our action items, let me just bring up that page quickly. I should note that some of our, first of all, I say we had a very good meeting at the ICANN 53 in Buenos Aires. Our session was, I think, we had a very good session. Many of the ICANN staff were there to answer questions and give feedback, and I think it was actually a very good call session at Buenos Aires. And we had a variety of action items. Some of those action items actually weren't recorded properly. So let me just, before I go to the formal action items that we have before, just to mention what they were, was that, let me just see if I can get the text here. Right, so Judith Helstein, Glenn McKnight, and Devon and staff to work on a message for outreach for the other ACs and SOs to join the technology task force. That has not been done yet, and I think perhaps now that the US IGF is now completed, we can now really work on this action item this week. So that's still outstanding. Jimmy Schultz from Uralo has been added to the TTF list, and that's been done. ICANN staff to organize a trial of Kavi workspace for the technology task force to test, and, well, that action item has been done. Steve Allison is on, from ICANN is on this call to talk more about Kavi. And ICANN staff to, which is Chris Giff, Samuel Suits, and Josh Jenkins, to work with the technology task force regarding the Lacroix mailing list translation issues. I just had some quick feedback from Josh Jenkins that there hasn't been really any update based on the Lacroix mailing list translation. So this is going to be a standard action item until just to get feedback and updates on this issue, because it's been going on for too long. And also post technology task force action item, add Tracy Hackshaw and Tracy Hines to the technology task force list. This, I believe, was done. Also add Alfredo Calderon from Neuralo to the TTF list. Just to mention that Tracy Hackshaw and Tracy Hines are from the GAC, specifically from the GAC and the GAC Secretariat. So this is actually based on the presentation and based on the discussions at Buenos Aires. They are very interested and are now joined to the mailing list. And, of course, Alfredo Calderon and Jimmy Schultz from Neuralo and Uralo, respectively. So welcome, all of you. Let's see. Just also to mention, there is one additional action item, and that's to investigate the new monthly, this came out of an action item from the Secretariat's meeting at Buenos Aires, and that is the Secretariat have developed a RELO template or RELO form, which is a Google form, and it's up and it requested that the Technology Task Force look at ways at which either this form could be implemented on the at-large wiki so that when the updates happen, when the RELOs use the form to update their status, it will be automatically update a wiki page. So most likely, from my perspective, we'll probably have to look at ways in which the form itself can be done in Confluence. Okay, so So let me. I think those were the key action items. Let's see. And just now to go through the action item report. And I'll paste the link here in the chat. The only other additional action item report was to also, well, this is something that perhaps I'll also ask Glenn and Judith as to probably how best to do this. One thing we did not do in time was to work on a remote hub documentation. So we're probably going to have to just keep this in mind and try to see if we can get some sort of documentation in time for the Dublin meeting, which is ICANN 54. But I think I've covered all of those action items as noted. Okay, so questions, comments on the action items?
Send an email.
Glenn, I think I don't know if you're saying anything, but we can barely hear you. Okay. All right. Seeing nobody else raising any comments or questions, then I think we're going to move on to the next agenda item, which is a first look at Kavi. Okay, so Kavi Workspace is a platform by which could be seen as a possible solution to our recommendation 26. Recommendation 26 from our Atlas 2 recommendations talks about a policy management process system. And the idea is being that, that this behind this recommendation was that ICANN needs some sort of workable policy management process system. And we have listed several aspirational goals for such a policy management process system. And ICANN itself was, based on requests from other AACs and SOs, was looking at using Kavi for policy development in another supporting organization, specifically one of the working groups in the GNSO, I believe. There's several certain features in this that is perhaps of interest at large, and I think this is why we are now here to now look at how we can begin testing this or doing a trial of this Kavi workspace. So with us today is Steve Allison from ICANN. Steve, welcome to the call. And perhaps if you could take the floor and explain what your experiences are with Kavi and what Kavi workspace has to offer for at large.
Thank you, Dev. So this morning, I'll try to give a brief overview of some of like the high-level functions that Kavi provides. Some of you may already be familiar with them, and some of them we might have to dive into a little bit more deeply because on the surface they're quite generic. But I'll give an overview of what it does provide. I can share a little bit about some of the things that we learned in the previous pilot that we did for the GNSO. Can everyone hear me okay? Dev, is my voice okay? A little low. If you give me 2 seconds, if there's a dial-in number, I might be able to dial in better. All right, I'll just try to speak up. So I'll give a brief overview of some of the major functions that Kavi provides, as well as talk a little bit about the DMPM GNSO working group pilot that we did with Kavi, not necessarily to talk about the success or failure of that specific pilot, but just to talk about some of the scenarios that arose running through the pilots and just give some background on how important it is for us to really articulate the needs that we have for this specific organization so that we can determine whether or not Kavi is or is not a viable opportunity for us. And then I can also hop right into Kavi and at least kind of click around and show you what it feels like to be in the platform. So to begin, if I may share my own screen, that might be good. I'm going to stop sharing this. Okay. Should I wait? Okay, I'll keep going. Okay, so before we hop into Covey, which this screen is showing, I'll just take you quickly to Covey's like main website, talk about a couple main features that they have. So Covey's like bread and butter is around workspace management. You know, workspace management is all of the features that combine in order to give a group of individuals an ability to work together toward some common end. That could be the production of a document. It could be a specific vote. It can be, you know, the upkeep of a wiki. But typically, the workspace has a specific goal in mind. It's an artifact that it would like to create. And so to that end, there's a couple main features. There's multi-author documents. This can be thought of, this JOS functionality that they have is very similar to Google Docs, but it's very, very lightweight. So it's meant for just real-time editing, messy document authoring to get some thoughts down with multiple people. So it's not intended necessarily for use of formally writing an opinion piece, if you will. It doesn't keep track of the history of who did what and when, and even if it did, it would be very difficult to, put back the pieces of the puzzle to figure out how you arrived at a certain point. But it is good for, like, sharing some thoughts and doing it in a single location where you can store the final product. And so the other features that it provides is file sharing. It's in fact very similar to how you do file sharing in Confluence. There is some flexibility for doing naming conventions and things like that, but by and large, it's a really simple document management solution. So if the needs of the group aren't super complex, then, it can be a nice solution for storing some documents and folders. Notifications is an ability for email addresses to be tied to user accounts and to receive short notifications on calendar invites, on documents that are uploaded, conversations that are taking place. And so you can tailor how many notifications and how few notifications you want to receive. You can even get like weekly or daily digests and things like that. And we'll talk a little bit more about notifications when I show you the site. There's voting, balloting, if you will. This is a really good tool that, potentially a good tool that has an ability to gauge the room on consensus of a specific topic. There's not a lot of different options for how to cast or how to kick off a vote, an election, if you will. But there is some options if you need to, quickly poll a room and identify if you want to go left or right. I'll talk about comments. Comments is a piece of functionality that allows you to take a document that's in your file share and to have a conversation around it. With the pilots that we did and through the demos that I've seen on comments, we didn't really find a ton of value in how it works. I'll kind of dive into it a little bit, but we just felt like we're so embedded within the application that we really couldn't have deep conversations. And what we would like to have experienced was an ability to work in our inboxes and kind of interact with each other on the document that may have been in the file sharing, or just have conversations that weren't even related to the document, and we just found that this was a little lacking. But I'll show you what it looks like and give you a sense for what that is. Projects are, is another piece of functionality that we didn't use, but it's potentially interesting to at large at some point. It's, it really just allows you to build a Gantt chart of milestones and see and to track along the way, like our progression towards that. And then the final thing is the security, and I'll kind of extend that to transparency. There's a bunch of features within Covey that try to control who can see what. In doing so, it allows, you know, for an ICANN community to be able to kind of flip itself inside out and to showcase the things that they want to showcase to the rest of the community so that there's a sense of transparency. So these are like the major functions that Covey Workspace provides. You know, looking at it at a surface level, these features are really similar, if not identical, to most other workspace tools. And the, you know, the devil's in the details, if you will. Like, it's very difficult to, on a surface, gauge how effective a tool is at actually accomplishing these things, and to do them in concert so that we can actually, you know, interact as a community is essential. So the only way we'll solve that, you know, problem is by doing the pilots and really articulating what our needs are and then measuring how effective it is in doing that. Before I hop into Covey, if anyone has any questions, throw them in the chat window or raise your hand, and we can hop on those first before we start looking at Covey. No questions? Okay. So what you're looking at right now, Natalie is so gracious. She allowed me to use her Genus as Secretariat's account to log in this morning because I had an account locked. But this is the main page that you would see when you log into Covey. Let's see. Yeah, we can talk about costing on the side. So if we're thinking about, okay, so when you log into Covey for the first time, there's a couple pieces of functionality that we see. We get a quick links that helps us jump into different functional areas within the site, the groups that we're a part of, documents that we have access to across all groups, events, voting, various projects that we may be a part of, emails and comments. In addition to that, there's this go-to menu that really tells you the same thing. It just gives you filtered aggregation of content that's in the site that you have access to. And in addition to that, you can see under My Groups, this would be where all of the groups that you're a part of show up, or some like top level of, you know, top 20 of those groups or something like that. So this is actually a nice little function to getting to the groups that you actually want to work in. I suspect that if you were part of many groups, which I don't know, you know, like if there are members of the community that are part of more than 20 groups, but if you were, this type of functionality of hopping around could become very cumbersome, just with the amount of data that they're presenting and the small amount of screen real estate that you have to get to it. In addition, there's this little aggregation window right here that tells you things that are up and coming, so things that are happening in the next 7 days, things that are happening in the next 30 days that can be of value to you. So if you have conference calls, for example, the technology task force call, those things could be built into Covey so that they'll show up here, and you could come to a single location if you like build a habit of coming into the site and seeing what things are coming up and coming, and you can set it also that, you know, it's showing the appropriate time zones and things like that. So these are all valuable additions for a homepage. But just one more thing to kind of think about is, like, you know, we spent the time to log into this site, and we don't see a ton of valuable content on our homepage. So as you start going through the pilot, these are the types of things to start looking at is, what does this experience really feel like to us, and is this going to actually attract us to do the day-to-day activities that we have and long-term strategic thinking that we have? Does it actually enable those things? I don't know if the answer is to that. But start thinking about each of the pages that you encounter and why they exist and whether or not they're actually effective at doing anything for you. So if I may, I'll hop into the DMPM just quickly to show you what it kind of feels like to be inside of a workspace. So when you log into any workspace, you kind of get the same generic layout, which is up at the top you have like your site-wide navigational elements, the different groups that exist, the various accounts that exist in the organization, your own messages and permissions and things like that. And then within the actual workspace that you have, there's all of the functions that we talked about earlier. We've got our little library. We have a link to the roster that we have within this work group. We have this group's calendar, comments that are taking place. And you can see, like, they call them comments. It's not a discussion board, really. It's like these disparate comments that can get attached to things. Ballots, action items that you can assign to one another, email, and then settings for the group. And then right below that, you get a little group info. So we've got, you can see that when the group was created, we actually were able to create our own mailing list. And that's all built into Covey. And so just like a point of reference is that if at-large goes to adopt a tool, specifically if they were to adopt Covey, it already is building its own mailing list for each of the groups. It gives them unique names. And so there's a lot of value in being able to do that, but it also creates a disjointed communication mechanism from the rest of the ICANN community who's still on Mailman. So a long-term question to solve is whether or not, you know, the entire community would evolve to a single tool that's obviously showcasing multiple features and functions, or if there's got to be integrations between the two so that there's like a seamless, transparent archive of communication. But these are the types of scenarios that kind of arise when we start looking at workspace tools, is that they encompass more than just like a space to do work. They're doing all of the tools that we would need to have in one like platform, and that kind of creates some conflicts with the existing tool sets that we have. So long-term problems have to be really thought out and figured out how to resolve those. To the right of the group info, there's basically a bunch of quick links. A lot of these links you can hit just by going to these top ones. They don't really provide a lot of added value, and we've had some long conversations with Covey about changing their layouts and things like that, because this is a lot of wasted screen real estate. But it does, at least for a newcomer, kind of hint at the types of things that are taking place within the site and the types of functions that they might have in a workspace. And then to the top right, sorry, Evan, I missed your comment. There is a lot of positive things, and I'll get to them. On the top right, there's an ability to contact your chair easily or post a message to the rest of the group or even view the charter. This is something that you can upload to the workspace so that you have like a single link to get the charter for the work group. So I don't, for GNSO, this was valuable. I don't know for at-large if they do charters every time they do a working group, but this is sort of designed with the thought process that a formal group would kind of come together, build a charter, and then from there they'd build the rest of their inputs. You can see, like, at the top, there's a lot of, like, screen real estate issues, but it's sort of like the landing page of the site, if you will. So under that, this is really, like, the meat of what happens within a working group. You get a lot of aggregated information of stuff that's taking place. So there's the activities, there's, you know, events that are taking place or messages that are going across the group. So that if you want to get a sense for the type of information that's being passed back and forth, current activity is a really good place to do that and kind of stay in the loop. So any message that's going back and forth using this DMPM at ICANN.covey.com gets tracked here. So as far as transparency purposes go, or as far as just staying in the loop, this is pretty valuable. obviously the quality of the content being passed back and forth is really important. You can see that just by skimming through the type of text here, it's difficult to figure out what's actually happening. So it requires a little discovery and to explore a little more deeply if you really want to get, intimate knowledge of what's happening. You can see there's also comments that get raised here and, you know, recent documents and things like that. And you could actually hop straight into those documents if you needed to. And then finally, there's this group notes section. This is really for, like, a secretariat or a group chair to, like, author. But this notes area can be done and redone over and over and provide, like, you know, important messages to the group. So it could be just, like, an intro. It could be the whole charter. It could be an abstract of something a pen holder is writing or something like that. So there's lots of purposes for this, but this is really just like a little whiteboard that can be used to put some important information in. So that's like really high level. And before I hop into like any of the lower level sections, if someone has like questions or comments, now would be a good time to pull them up and then I'll answer those.
Well, this is David Anand here, Steve. So thanks for this. I mean, so far, I must say, let me ask a question that comes to mind, though. I mean, I see it's a lot of information. Two things that come to mind. One, there's a lot of information that's being presented to you, which is both good and bad. I'm kind of wondering, how does this work for mobile access? Like, so if somebody is using this on a mobile tablet or phone, does this site work for that, or have you tested for that?
So it does work for mobile. We didn't get any pilot results using mobile. It's a really interesting question of work habit. So you can navigate the site using mobile, but the real question is, if you're navigating through mobile, are you doing it as a consumer of information? Are you trying to get some level of work completed, for example, a ballot? The type of work that you actually do on the site is important in gauging its effectiveness. And we haven't gone down and tested the mobile experience at that level. We're still in the process, at least for this specific group, in validating the effectiveness of just the work getting completed in an organized fashion. And Evan made a comment, you know, I've been a little harsh on Covey, and it's true. Like, we are trying to be very critical about what a workspace should be like and what it should look like and how it should affect us. And different groups are going to have different needs. And so I think that for us in DMPM, we put a lot of work into hosting the pilot, and we had, you know, varying results there. But that doesn't mean that for at large it can't be a perfect tool. It really requires us to articulate what our problem set is. And if mobile is a need, it has mobile responsiveness built into it. It's not its own app. It's just the website itself. But the effectiveness of that is really us articulating what functions we really need in mobile.
Okay. Well, this is Dave. I guess one observation, just by looking from, it looks like what this tool does, it seems to incorporate using this. In order to really make most effective use, you will have to really, I would say, go all into using this in a sense of using this to set up the mailing list and so forth, which potentially could save time from a staff administrative point of view. But I guess I probably want to see more before I continue commenting. I see that there's several other questions in the chat, so I'll put my hand down.
Yeah, and maybe just one final point on your comment, Dev, is that as far as platforms go, from what I have researched, all of them kind of package everything up together. I could be wrong, right? There might be options out there that don't tie into it. They're, listservs and things like that. Most of them try to provide this full enterprise experience. And so there's you know, if we go down that route at some point, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some difficulty as a larger community feeling that out and kind of evolving with it. And so, you know, just some things to keep in the back of your mind is, how does this affect all the other experiences that we have going on? So the question of different operating platforms, it does work with different operating platforms. Essentially, it all functions in the browser, so you could use I've tried it with Chrome, Opera, Firefox, and Safari. I haven't tried it with Internet Explorer, but I believe others have, and that the experience is fine. I mean, as far as this website goes, it's pretty, like, basic as far as navigating around and things like that. It's not doing a ton of complex interactions with the user, so it seems to work fine with different operating systems or different browsers. Yeah, and the site is responsive, thanks, Evan. I don't know the answer to this one. That's a good question. It's something we could explore. I don't know if what you're asking is just integrating the things that we create within this space to a learning platform. If that were the case, we could build, like, automated integration points that would pull information out of Covey and stick it into a new learning platform. That would be possible.
So just this is Dave and I'm again, just to ask the question that's been raised in the chat. So so in terms of translating, is this multilingual, I guess, is the question, because the at-large community is a very diverse community, you know, 5 different regions, several different languages in use, typically Spanish and French being the two more popular other languages than English. So I think that's what. So it's like, can somebody? So if somebody logs in, is it that you see the menus and everything in say Spanish or French or in their own language?
So I should know the answer to that, and I don't off the top of my head. There's, if what we want to do is navigate things that we call string translations, things like home, documents, roster, group info. These are all things that occur over and over and over in the site, so you can translate them once and it will place them everywhere. So these string translations, there is potential for us to translate those once and have it done. I don't know if this specific website offers translations. I suspect that it does not. But there are other solutions that you could bolt on top of this that would allow us to navigate around this site and still allow us to translate it. And so it's something that we could look into if that was the route we were going. For things like group notes, that gets a little more complex because this is dynamic. The information in this site is dynamic. And it's still also possible to translate those things. It's just not natively within this site, I suspect. But there are some interesting tools out there that layer on top of a website such as Covey that allows the translation team to look at the website, do the translations in their own translation tools, and then layer it on top. So it's essentially like mirrors the site so that people can work within their site. But it's still the process of getting stuff translated and making sure that everyone knows what needs to be translated and getting it all coordinated. I think that's the most difficult part of all that. But I don't think that there's any automated translation, stuff like that. But I've just jotted a note to go back and find out from them, like, what other communities do that are clients of theirs.
Okay. Well, this is Dave again, Steve. I know time is also coming on us. So is there a particular point? I mean, I don't know if you'll have time to go through each of these things, though.
Yeah.
You wanted to show us, at least first briefly go through each of these more, the different things, documents, roster, comments.
I'll just click through them just to give you a sense for what it feels like.
Sure.
Just remember, like, if we go through a pilot, we can go through all these scenarios in detail. But just to get a sense, so this is the Documents Library. It's very similar to any SharePoint tool or, you know, file share. You get a number of folders on the side and a number of documents that are created. You can see the revision numbers, which is really nice. If you upload a new version of the document, you can tie it to an existing one, and you kind of get a little trace of that. And you can see who's download, like how many downloads there's been and things like that. But it's very basic. It's just a bunch of files and folders. There's other valuable things, like you can build into it naming conventions and things like that, which are valuable for us if we start as an community defining more formal naming conventions. That will actually help people find groups and documents. And so ICANN's actually in the process of trying to find a library scientist that can help us do these things. There's a roster. This is really valuable. It'll give you an index of all of the individuals' accounts that exist in the group. You can see if there's a chair, if they're a voting member, which even if you guys don't have voting members, it's fine. You don't have to use it. And then you can actually click to see their profile and things that they're active in and such. The profiles here are not tied to ICANN.org or anything like that, so like we'd be duplicating another set of logins and things like that. We're just, ICANN's not in a place yet to solve the problem of single sign-on and single universal profiles, but it is a long-term vision of theirs, or potentially like a different solution might facilitate that more easily. But the roster is really good just figuring out who's in the group and what their info is. In the future, if you guys do statements of interest like GNSO, then we can build that into something like this so that you can actually see the person's statement of interest for the group that they're working on. There's a calendar, basic calendar functionality. You can create events, and it's just, you can set one time zone within Covey and then reuse that across all the groups. So we set ours to UTC, the most common. And so you can create everything in UTC and make sure that everyone knows that they're not going to miss out on something that they need to know. In this calendar, you can subscribe to it. You can RSVP to events and things like that. So there's a lot of functionality built into the calendar. Within DMPM, we've had varying levels of success getting people to use the RSVP mechanism. But the calendar functionality itself is pretty nice to have, like, a dedicated calendar for the team. Comments I talked about earlier. Comments, you can see it's a little difficult when you land on the comments page. It's difficult to figure out what you're looking at. But what happens is there are many documents in the documents library. And then of those documents, you can actually post questions or comments about that document. And so I won't click on these for the specific demo, but it will be interesting to see if we can extract value from something like this, or if more of a discussion forum is more valuable. But this is basically used for people within the group to be able to critique a piece of work and even propose a solution to that piece of work so that, like a chair or, in your case, a pen holder could go through those one by one, determine what they want to do with those comments, and even close them out. I got a raised hand from Judith. Question?
Yes, this is Judith Helsing, for the record. My question I asked earlier is, have we tested the site for accessibility issues? Both on the mobile and on the other platform. And then I was also asking, I know we like to test everything on Linux because we have a bunch of people use Linux and see if that works. And then on the roster issue, does it track, like if we use this for each meeting, will it track who comes to a meeting?
Yeah, okay, so the first question, accessibility, is outside of the scope of the pilot that we did, but we do have the accessibility working group, and my colleague Laura Bangford is also working really closely with them. If this were getting to a point where, hey, functionally this does what we want it to do, we're really happy with it, or we're happy with the things that we know they're going to invest in to get it the way we want it. Accessibility comes into play, and we can definitely go through an assessment of it and make sure we know what things have to change before we go live with it. And I suspect that Covey would react, you know, positively to feedback that we give them and provide the functionality we need for accessibility, whether it's mobile or on a different platform. So the question of Linux, the question is really less about whether or not you have Linux and more about what browser you're using. So if it's like a non-standard browser, maybe you could just ping me on the side and let me know what browser functionality is being used, and we could test it out with that, but I suspect that there would be no problems. And then the final question on rostering and attendance. Covey does actually do attendance. It's built into the calendar so that per event, the secretariat or someone with more an administrative role can actually, they get a list of the roster and they have little check boxes next to each name and they check them off as they arrive or don't arrive. And so you can track rostering across a single calendar event, and then you can aggregate the results of that over the lifetime of a group. And then you can, I believe, and Natalie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you can also mark the date at which, in fact, I think it automates this, where if somebody joins the group mid, you know, life cycle, that their attendance is calculated as such, so that it's not like they were missing for half of the working group. I suspect that was right then. Ballots is a way to really gauge the temperature of the room. I'll just quickly show what it looks like. So you give it a title, you give it a question, and then there's different types of ballot options that you have available to you. But really, I'm trying to remember this as I go. Yeah, so it's really like a yes-no kind of question, and then you could do like a custom where you actually build into it the options that you want people to be able to select. But it doesn't do, you know, racking and stacking. It doesn't do any, you know, complex ranking or weighting or anything like that. So so it really just depends, like, how intense your balloting needs are. I've looked at some of the GNSO or the at-large ballots that Ariel's created in Big Pulse, and she was nice enough to spend some time and show me how it all works. And I think that you could probably get the level of functionality that she's providing in Big Pulse right within your ballots here. And so you could do those at an ALAC level. You could do them as an at-large overall level, or you could do it just as a small group with a pen holder that's trying to gauge, you know, the direction that they should take their document. And then just real quickly, and I apologize, Deb, for taking so much time, but the action items is, it's a really, really light mechanism for assigning work to people. And then I believe it all, like, kind of ties into the calendar and things like that. So it's a good way if you have, like, a large group of people working on something to kind of break out the work that you need to do. And action items is one way to do that. We didn't really test this in DMPM, so it's difficult to know how effective it is at doing it, but it seems just like a really lightweight assigning to an individual. So that's, like, in a nutshell, just to give you kind of some perspective on things. You can see that the company is still building functionality to kind of improve the experience of what it feels like to work within Covey. So those are all good signs that they'll continue to, you know, improve things. But I think good steps for at large would be to really think about in detail the process, their Z process that they go through for creating a piece of policy advice, and then us trying to articulate that in terms of use case scenarios that we can run through with a group of people to actually measure it, the effectiveness of it. Any questions?
Well, this is me.
Glenn, maybe real quick, just to Glenn's point, is I'm not recommending or trying to, like, really discourage it. I really want at large to be able to discover that on their own. There's lots of tools out there. We could even potentially custom build something right into atlarge.icon.org one day. There's lots of opportunities for us to get it right. What I really want is to just encourage at large to really feel a sense of ownership in picking the direction they want to take. And that starts with, like, really articulating what their needs are. And I can definitely help us go through that process. But I don't want them to feel like I'm just going to shove a product on them that doesn't necessarily work for them.
Okay. Well, this is Dave. Thanks, Steve, for this. It's actually very detailed, a lot of detailed information about Kavi. And as I know we're coming close to our time here. So is there any, but I'll just ask the group, is there anybody has any comments, questions regarding the general, not so much any technology issues, but anything regarding the general policy management process part? Floor is open to anybody. Okay. Ah, I see Olivier's hand is raised. Olivier, please go ahead. You may be muted, Olivier.
I've tried to unmute. I was muted twice. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Lovely. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. Olivier Chapin-Ablon speaking. I'm very impressed with this Kavi system. I guess the important thing is how customizable is it to our needs? And with this, probably the best way is for us to be able to play with it somehow and maybe do a test run on one of the one of our processes, a dry run, so not one that we're going to use in reality, but do a sort of test run and see really where we need some amendments and some things to be changed. And so on. I must say, I arrived a little late, so I kind of missed half of the presentation, and I'll be looking at the recording or listening to the recording. But from what I see at the moment, it looks pretty good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Olivier.
Yeah. So the question
ahead,
on customization, I don't, it depends on what we need to customize. I suspect that if we were to do a full engagement with this organization, that there would be some level of customization that they would provide us, but there is some level of risk to that as well. So I don't know the answer, but working with them on our DMPM pilot, every time we encountered an issue, instead of discussing in terms of how we could customize the product to make it do what we want to do, or even things that we found that maybe were even deficiencies that they should build into their core product, they tended to want to find a workaround to our solution, which in the long term, that's a bad strategy. That said, customizing enterprise products like this, there's an inherent amount of risk associated with doing that because now either the company is supporting two products, essentially us and everyone else, or they're not supporting us and they're just supporting everyone else. So you can get out of sync for product updates and things like that. So it really comes down to, like, what kind of customizations we need. If it's look and feel, like, styling and things like that, I suspect there are things that we can do.
Okay. This is Dave. So I think I have to share Olivia has a follow-up. Go ahead, Olivia.
Thanks, Dave. It's Olivia speaking. Actually, I'll let you follow up, and then I'll follow up on what you said.
Okay. This is Dave. Again, I have to say, I'll just agree with what Olivia said, and I think perhaps it is something we probably have to play with because I can see different roles happening. There's the ALAC member, being able to vote on ratify statements. There is the working groups and working group chairs organizing and commenting on various policies. And then there's the ALSs or at-large community regular members then trying to get involved in the policy development processes and making comments and so forth. So my only concern is that it seems to be an all-in type of product in a sense that it's not something that could be added on. But that's just my initial concern. And, of course, the concerns, as mentioned, is it accessible? Is it multilingual? Obviously, those are other key concerns, too. Is it accessible via mobile? Those are other key concerns. So that was just my comment. Go ahead, Olivier.
Thanks very much, Dave. Olivier Capanablon speaking. You spelled it out pretty well. I would say our difficulty that we're going to have is to actually be able to have one single product that can have, on the one hand, power users, or what one could call power users, as you said, working group chairs, ALAC, people that deal with at large on a daily basis. And on the other side, we're going to have total novices that will obviously need some hand-holding to be able to use the system. And I'm not sure how we'll be able to get the two to be able to use the same system. The newcomers and novices might be put off by the amount of information that comes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's something, and that's why I mentioned customization. We might need to have a simplified information for those that are not the power users, and the whole feed for others who are the power users. But obviously, we can only do that once we play with it. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Olivier. And indeed, I fully agree with what you said. Okay, we're now...
If I could just add one more comment to what
go ahead,
you just said, is that I totally understand your position on that. And from like a ICANN-specific perspective as well, we've been struggling with the same concepts, is that there's a lot of different tools used by different organizations within the community and even within ICANN itself. And we really have to tackle this, I suspect, from a very big picture approach where everybody's sort of thinking about the same strategy for how we do work and how we think about things, I suspect. And so at a minimum, I think ICANN recognizes the challenge in taking any new platform and trying to replace other existing ones, knowing that there'll be a lot of pain in doing so, and that it's not appropriate to do that unless there are significant gains that the community will recognize from it. And so we're at least sensitive to the fact that, you know, all these communities are working in concert as well as within themselves, and that they need to be considered together.
Okay. All right. I think we need to move on to this agenda item. So I think that action item is that I think the TTF and the chairs and co-chairs will work with Steve Allison to arrange for a trial, and then we'll work with other members on the TTF mailing list and see who will be interested in actually joining and testing this tool. Okay, so again, thanks, Steve. Thanks for showing us this. It was very informative and actually a lot to think about.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so we're now coming at the 5 minutes to the hour, so I'm going to just beg your indulgence to probably just take an additional 5 minutes to look at this next agenda item, and that is something called group calendaring. And first of all, I'm going to try to share my screen. Share. Okay, so just to make sure, is everyone seeing my screen? Yes? No? Oh, I can't see the comments now. Okay, I can see it. Good. Okay, so this item is talking about group calendaring. And what has been happening is that this is coming out from something from the subcommittee on outreach and engagement, which is to investigate how a calendar can be used by the subcommittee and work with the global stakeholder engagement to track possible outreach events in our 5 regions. At Large has an external events calendar. It's on every single RALO page, but I think most people are probably not even aware this calendar, and it requires essentially emailing at large staff to update to tell them about a possible event, you know, the name of the event, where it is, etc. And then staff will then update it, which is a Google Calendar, and then everybody can subscribe to it and get updates. The challenge, as far as I see with that, is that A, hardly anybody ever was aware of this calendar, so it's not really being used by at large. Secondly, while global stakeholder engagement was supposed to email such events to at large in order to be better coordinated, that type of thing is not happening. And what is happening, and the lack of a calendar makes it very hard to really plan for outreach events, especially with regards to CROP, which is the Community Regional Outreach Pilot Program, which allows for outreach trips to outreach travel to events once they are filed 8 weeks before the event takes place. So if you find out about the event next week, you can't take advantage of it. And global stakeholder engagement has their calendars, but they don't really want to share that entire calendar publicly because they have, well, I would say, top sensitive information about their detailed travel that's happening across all of the regions. So I started to investigate this, and I'm now going to present something that I thought I think actually kind of works, and that's called Team Up. Okay, and now I'm going to show you the screen here, and here's what it looks like, and it's quite customizable, and I've made it look like I put the at large logo. And it has an about, and you have calendars, just like a Google Calendar. One of the key features, however, is that this type of platform, the way it works is, that you can have different URLs for each of your different groups. So, for example, I have for this link is what they call the accesses for. An example Relo, and I have another link which is for the GSC, and then another link for if you wanted to just view outreach events only. And these are all very different links if you look at the top bar. And the idea is that you then give the different stakeholder groups the different URLs. So I've created, if you look at the outreach only one, I did create like five calendars. But for purposes of the demonstration, I just created an example Relo calendar and so that people can have an idea of how it works. And I also have, let me just also show you the access for staff. And let me just go through some of these options. And let me just go to settings. So the way this works is that let me just go to calendar views. Right, here they are. So if I go to calendars, I can create, the admin person can create different calendars. And what we can do is customize each of those views. So for example, let me just see what would be the best way to do this. All right. Best way to do it would be to, I'll guess, show you here. So what this does is that I've created different links for each of the various groups. And I have one for the AFRALO, for example, the Africa Global Stakeholder Engagement, and then a view only link for each of those things. So if I was to click on this link, I can then see the different permissions. So we can set a password which but that's not needed, I think. But what we can do is we can now have a calendar that's only that with this link they can only access the Africa outreach events, and the permission given is what they call modify from same link. And if you look at what modify from same link does, it means that it allows adding new events. And existing events can be modified if they have been created through the same link. So the idea is here is that the reason why we have one for AFRA, for each relu, and one for the GSE staff is that each can create events, but can only be edited or altered by those respective parties. So the benefit is that although they're on the same calendar, the calendar entries are tabbed with whoever created the link, created a calendar event. So that way you can have like sort of different permissions for each of those for each of the groups. Okay, so just to give an example, I see a hand raised. Judith, go ahead.
So this is Judith Halston for the record. What I don't understand is if you subscribe to one calendar, if you only want certain events, there doesn't seem to be a way to just check some events. Like if you only want Navajo, certain events are Navajo, certain events are different working groups. If
right.
you subscribe to the one calendar, you'll get everything, and you don't want everything.
No. Right. Well, that's it. That's why you have different links for each of the different calendars. So Navajo would only look at one calendar. I mean, this is like for global outreach look here. So what happens now is that you can now, just as an example, all right, let me just do this as an example. If you look at this link here for the example relu, you only see the example relu. You don't see the other four regions. So this is this way
oh,
you,
no,
could,
but,
you don't
but,
need to...
But Dev,
so,
what comes out when you subscribe and it exports into your own calendar? People are not checking... That's my question, because
right.
when I subscribe to different Google calendars, I get everything, and sometimes I don't want everything.
Right. So the way it is that you can visit this page, you can then also have the different calendar feeds and subscribe to those events. So let me just show you like how to. I just wanted to do a quick example here. If you wanted to add an event. So I know that the IGF is in 10th to 13th of November 2015. So let me just jump in to November 10 to 13. So I can say IGF 2015. Because this person only has can only edit this calendar, that's all they will see. Okay? And what I can do also is that I can also add a more descriptive account. I can even also add images and so forth. So I for example, I can now insert a document either from Dropbox as well or from the web. I can add images and so forth. And then also, after I save this, I can also, if I wanted to share, I could save it to your calendar. Person can then save this to their calendar, be it their Google calendar, Outlook calendar, Yahoo, or whatever. Or you can even share it via Facebook or Twitter. Or you could share it as a web page and then email it to people. So what happens, you can then, so even for people who don't use calendaring, you can then email a web page link or a Twitter or Facebook post pointing to this event. So let me just. Let me just refresh this. Right. So now that I've refreshed the GSE thing, the GSE link, I can see the event. I can read it. I can now save it to my calendar directly for that one event, or I can email it and share it via Facebook or Twitter, or via email. So I thought this was actually quite clever because now we can have different calendars for all the five regions, and what happens now is that the outreach and engagement members can have permissions to edit their events or add their events. Global stakeholder engagement can now add their events directly, and we can now all see it on their own individual regional calendar, and then subscribe to those, and then have people subscribe to those calendars separately. or globally if it all wanted to. So that's, I think we're trying to do this. So I think I could just stop there and just have any comments or questions on this.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I answered your question, Judith. Just to answer the question from Niran. Yes, you can subscribe to the different feeds. So, for example, and if you go to the global outreach feed, for example, I can get the calendar feed for every single separate feed, calendar out there. So if you want to subscribe to all the events for whatever reason, there's an all calendar feed. Or if you're just interested in North American and Latin American and Caribbean, you have two separate calendars to import. And it works by taking that ICS feed and pulling it into Google Calendar, Yahoo Calendar, Outlook, whatever. Yes, you can answer this question. You can also do this with Gmail. You can then import this directly into your Google Calendar. Seeing Evan typing. Ah, okay. And I know it's now past the hour, so any other thoughts or comments on this group calendar? Because I'm going to propose this to the outreach group. And actually, the thing is that global stakeholder engagement, outreach and engagement working groups, and even, I would say, even the NOMCOM isn't really working together on outreach events. And this is it. So I'm thinking that even the NOMCOM can be given a group and to add events and so forth. So I think all of us could work collaboratively on one group calendar. So, and the neat thing is that it's really up to not emailing persons, a staff person to update it. Ourselves as members can edit the calendar directly. Okay. All right. Okay. Any other thoughts or comments or questions? Now we're coming up to 10 past the hour. Going once, going twice, okay. Okay, then I think we can now end the call. Let me just stop it. Yeah, so, Olivier, please go ahead.
Thanks, David. It's Olivier speaking. I was just going to add that these are all very good tools. What we need to do is either we're going to have some webinars that explain how to use these calendars or write a simple document to help people out with those. I still don't know to what extent people use those calendars yet. It takes a little demonstration, I guess, just like what you gave here, for the wider at-large community to be able to understand it.
Yes. This is Dave. So perhaps webinars or perhaps some screencasts can be done to educate persons for each of the different groups. But I think the problem is that we've really suffered from an outreach and engagement perspective, especially as it relates to the crop RT, because global stakeholder engagement was aware of an event happening in our region, but they didn't share it with the relevant regional at large. And regional at large was aware of events, and global stakeholder engagement wasn't aware of. So it was really, really frustrating. And it's easy to say we should email each other, but that just is tedious. So if we had a calendar by which all of us subscribe to, we can now see these things and then, plan for it appropriately. So I agree. So I plan to show this on the outreach and engagement subcommittee call when it comes out, when that call takes place. But I've gotten tentative feedback from global stakeholder, well, at least from the Latin American and Caribbean global stakeholder, and from the NOMCOM chair, that they are also looking to do calendaring. So perhaps you could, this type of solution can work for all of those groups. Okay. All right. Seeing no further comments or questions. First of all, thanks everyone for attending. I noticed we have quite a few new faces on this call, and I look forward to you still feel to attend other calls and technology task force calls in the future. Okay. So there, I would like to thank everyone again, and this call is now adjourned. Thanks, everyone.